This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
raucous, violent protests have surfaced before South Africa's municipal elections, a trend analysts say they fear will continue until the next round of national polls in 3 years.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up.
Also, the government of Nigeria agrees to a one-month ceasefire with militants who've been blowing up oil pipelines in the Niger Delta. And officials in the Central African Republic report that two people died in gunfighting in the capital Bangui yesterday following the kidnapping of six policemen.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, violence is expected to continue to increase in South Africa as local elections approach in August, say political analysts. VOA's Anita Powell has the story from Johannesburg.
Raucous, violent protests have surfaced before South Africa's municipal elections, a trend analysts say they fear will continue until the next round of national polls in 3 years.
I think it's clear that things in South Africa will get worse in the next 2 years. Economically, politically, in terms of violence, there are prospects for improvement, but these are generally only possible beyond 2019.
As analyst Yaki Siliers was making this point with the help of slides and graphs derived from months of research at the Institute for Security Studies, residents of Pretoria's Atteridgeville Township illustrated this in their own blunter way. Just 20 kilometers from the Institute, protesters torched vehicles and tires, looted shops, and hurled rocks at passing motorists over their unhappiness with the ruling African National Congress. Siliers notes much of this anger stems from the ANC choice of leaders, in particular, increasingly unpopular President Jacob Zuma, who has weathered mounting corruption scandals in recent years. His second and final term will end in 2019.
There's no doubt that President Zuma is the most important recruitment machine for the Democratic Alliance and the EFF. And the longer that he stays in power and remains at the helm of the ANC, the better those two parties will do.
Protesters in Atteridgeville say they are upset because ANC leadership appointed a mayoral candidate who is from another province instead of the local candidate they prefer. South Africa does not have a history of violent democratic elections. But since 2010, ISS figures show violent protests have risen to an average of three protests each day. Academic Stephen Friedman, who heads the Center for the Study of Democracy, says it is fairly easy to pinpoint why so many people are available to throw rocks in the middle of a weekday. South Africa's economy contracted severely at the beginning of this year. Nearly 27% of the population is unemployed. And more than two decades after the fall of apartheid, government statistics show black South Africans are significantly poorer than their white counterparts. But Friedman argues the angriest group of South Africans is far more dangerous politically.
The most angry group of South Africans today is not unemployed people in the townships. The most angry group of South Africans who also have the capacity to do something about their anger are black middle-class South Africans. And they are angry precisely because, in their view, they have the qualifications that their parents and grandparents didn't have. They have some of the job opportunities that their grandparents and parents didn't have. And in their view, they encounter exactly the same racial attitudes as their parents and grandparents encountered.
As the Rainbow Nation heads violently towards the August 3rd vote, analysts say South Africa's democracy faces its toughest challenge yet. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The government of Nigeria has agreed to a one-month ceasefire with militants who have been blowing up oil pipelines in the Niger Delta. Officials confirmed a truce was signed after President Muhammadu Buhari said he was scaling back a military presence in the region. Several recent oil pipeline attacks by Niger Delta Avengers and other groups have severely reduced output of crude oil from the region. The Avengers stepped up attacks this year when the government stopped payments to former militants they had asked to defend the pipelines since 2008. The region is plagued by poverty and unemployment and demands a share in the profits from the export of oil and gas from the swamps of the Delta.
Well, for years, Nigeria's economy has been crippled by the corrupt practices of government officials stealing from state profits of the oil and gas industry. During his first year in office, President Muhammadu Buhari has struck at the nation's oil corruption. In recent weeks, he also directed his attention at his own military, where more than 50 military officers, some bearing senior rank, have been sacked for siphoning off public funds meant to fight Boko Haram. Awal Musa Rafsanjani is the director of Transparency International's office in Abuja. He has become an enthusiastic supporter of Mr. Buhari's crusade to end bribery. He talks to VOA's David Arnold in Washington about changes taking place in Nigeria. Rafsanjani begins by looking back at military practices under former President Goodluck Jonathan.
The last administration actually has committed that kind of uranium corruption and actually helped Boko Haram to kill innocent Nigerians by refusing to utilize the money allocated to buy weapons to fight the insurgency and to also pay allowances of the security personnel, especially the junior and middle-level officers. So it is really unfortunate that the corrupt public officers and the civil servants, as well as some military officers, you know, have connived to siphon money that is meant to buy, you know, equipment to do with the issue of Boko Haram and other related insurgency in the country. This money was actually diverted, and many people who have benefited from this money are coming for the first time in the history of the country to contest the role they play in terms of stealing this money, sharing this money in the name of election campaign. So both the politician and the military officers were involved in this scandal.
How successful has the president been in his first year?
Since the new administration has come on board, there's no press scandal in terms of stealing or diverting public funds. I think the present administration has succeeded in also making sure that anybody who, no matter how powerful you are, if you are caught with evidence that you have stolen or diverted public funds, you'll be able to be prosecuted. I think it is very successful thing that has happened in the country. We have never had it before. This time around, there's no care whether you are affiliated with the party, with the ruling party, whether you are a powerful businessman or you are a powerful businesswoman, whether you are a member of the elite that have constituted themselves as power brokers in the country. Anybody who is found guilty is facing, or she's facing, you know, the law of the land. I think this is something that we need to celebrate in Nigeria and sustain.
There are many people involved at the federal level, corruption charges, but at the state level, the problem could be much larger and more difficult to solve.
Yes, the problem really is bigger because you do not have the kind of personality or the kind of committed people to really stop corruption at the level of the state and local government level. They have large resources that they are managing at their own disposal. Majority of the state governors do not make themselves available to join efforts towards eradicating, you know, or at least dealing with corruption and corrupt tendencies. We are seeing the continuation of waste, you know, extravagancy in terms of, you know, resources at the state level.
Can you identify any particular states that are more likely to carry on the battle of fighting corruption?
I think the Kaduna state government appears to be working in tandem with the federal government in the effort to ensure that corruption is actually rooted out. I think Lagos state government is likely going to do that because there seems to be an open system in Lagos state, and also Cross River, out of all the states you have in the south-south, appears to have systems that could actually deal with the issue of corruption.
What are the benefits for Nigeria if Buhari is actually successful in gaining control over corruption?
Right now, you can see that within the 1 year of the present administration, there has been some kind of acceptance from the international community to Nigeria. A lot of countries are willing to do business with Nigeria because they believe that the present administration is committed, is serious, and they have seen that he had meant well by, you know, ensuring that purity, corruption, actually dealt with squarely. And we can see that Boko Haram has been reduced to nothing. and corruption, and corrupt people are actually hiding. A lot of corrupt people are not celebrating their corrupt ways now. They are hiding, they are running. So this is a very clear indication that Nigeria would actually restore its glory. Now, meaningful, you know, development can happen in terms of infrastructure development, in terms of injecting resources for education, for healthcare system.
That was Awal Musa Rafsanjani in Abuja talking with VOA's David Arnold about Nigerian corruption. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hees Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The government of Nigeria has agreed to a one-month ceasefire with militants who have been blowing up oil pipelines in the Niger Delta. And violence is expected to continue to increase in South Africa as local elections approach. As for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Officials in the Central African Republic report that two people died yesterday in gunfighting in the capital Bangui following the kidnapping of six policemen. A security official told Reuters heavily armed former Seleka fighters took the hostages on Sunday. Tension has increased in the nation 4 months after Faustin Arsange Touadera was elected president. The nation's leaders hoped the election would end more than a year of communal violence between Muslim Seleka fighters and Christian forces known as the Anti-Balaka.
The International Criminal Court in The Hague has sentenced former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba to 18 years in prison for murder, rape, and pillaging committed by his troops in Central African Republic more than a decade ago. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Taking into account all factors mentioned above, the chamber sentences Mr. Bemba.
Presiding Judge Sylvia Steiner read out the sentence at the end of the short hearing as Jean-Pierre Bemba, wearing a dark suit and a blue tie, listened intently. She said Bemba will get credit for the 8 years he's already spent in prison. The former Congolese vice president was convicted by the International Criminal Court in March of war crimes and crimes against humanity for his troops' brutal campaign in Central African Republic in 2002 and 2003. He's not only the first person convicted by a global war crimes court for crimes of sexual violence, but also the first to be held directly responsible for crimes committed by his soldiers.
Mr. Bemba's failure to take action was deliberately aimed at encouraging the attack directed against the civilian population and directly contributed to continuation and further commission of crimes.
The prosecution had asked for a minimum 25-year sentence for Bemba. His defense team says he will appeal, alleging the court made numerous mistakes. During the sentencing, Judge Steiner recalled some of the most horrific testimony, like this one, of a rampage by Bemba's soldiers.
V1 was gang-raped on two separate occasions during the one-day attack on Mungumba. First, two soldiers took turns raping her while others looked on, shouting with joy. And then four soldiers raped V1 until she lost consciousness.
Human Rights Watch says the sentence offers a measure of justice for victims in CAR, where armed groups have preyed on civilians for years. Others should take notice, HRW said, that they too could be held accountable for their acts. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Angelina Jolie, the special envoy for the U.N. High Commission for Refugees, attended an iftar dinner Monday evening. It took place at All Dulles Area Muslim Society, Adams Center in Northern Virginia, as part of the World Refugee Day events. Our senior Middle East reporter, Mohammed El-Shanawi, has details.
During the event, which comprised members of various faiths, Secretary Kerry addressed the issue of a rising global number of refugees that now includes 65 million people. He warned against calls by some Republican politicians to bar Muslim refugees applying to enter the United States.
We need to remember that bigoted and hateful rhetoric towards Muslims plays right into the hands of the terrorist recruiters who propagate the lie that America is at war with Islam, when in fact there is no country on earth where Muslims enjoy more freedom than in the United States of America.
Secretary Kerry noted that blocking any group on the basis of religion, race, or nationality goes against American ideals. He says all Muslim refugees who apply to enter the United States undergo vigorous security vetting and therefore do not pose a security threat to the U.S.
There is absolutely no evidence, my friends, zero evidence, that refugees who make it through this arduous process pose any greater threat to our society than the members of any other group.
Secretary Kerry said thousands of refugees around the United States want their new neighbors to know that they are not the perpetrators of terror or violence, but rather people who yearn just like them, only to live in security and peace. Actress Angelina Jolie, the United Nations Special Envoy for Refugees, said there is a need to treat all refugees equally.
As citizens, we do not only want freedom and human rights for every single person in our society, we want that for every person in the world. Upholding the ideal that all people are born equal and deserve equal rights and dignity. And that is the essence of what it is to be a citizen of a democracy. It is how we treat the weakest or the most vulnerable among us that says the most about our commitment to human rights and equality and justice for all people.
Imam Muhammad Magid of the Adams Center praised Secretary Kerry and the UN Special Envoy Jolie for their relentless efforts to ease the plight of the refugees and noted that the interfaith gathering reflects the fact that all faiths care for those who are in need.
No politics or religion should be an obstacle to helping those in need because it's a humanitarian crisis and required humanitarian compassion response.
Islamic centers, churches, and Jewish synagogues across the United States are providing a wide variety of services to help the refugees who arrive to the United States. Mohammed El-Shanawi, VOA News, Washington. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Center, NOAA, expects a more than 70% chance that La Niña will replace El Niño in the Northern Hemisphere this fall and winter. Both are weather patterns determined by ocean temperatures. According to NOAA documentation, there's a good chance that La Niña will bring drought or decrease the rainfall in East Africa and some parts of Asia. Sora Halaki spoke with U.S. Geological Survey geographer and research scientist at UC Santa Barbara, Chris Funk, who has done extensive climate studies of East Africa.
La Niña is the name given to the cooling of the surface of the Central and Eastern Pacific Oceans that occurs every 2 to 5 years. United States Geological Survey, USGS research scientist, and East Africa's climate expert, Dr. Chris Funk, speaking from his California office, says if La Niña develops, it brings a series of droughts.
The scientists at NOAA are predicting that El Niño is going to quickly go away and probably be replaced by La Niña, with about a 75% chance of that happening by the fall. And if that happens, it's quite possible that in the southern part of Ethiopia in the fall and spring of next year. So that would be sort of a potential for a double whammy, where they had an El Nino-related drought in the north this year, followed by a La Nina-related drought in the southern part of the country next year.
Citing historical phenomena, Christ associates La Nina with dangerous rainfall deficits.
The dangers of La Nina for East Africa can be that, you know, there are two rainy seasons in the equatorial part of East Africa. They get rains in the fall, October, November, December, and then there's another rainy season in March, April, May. And one of the dangers of La Nina is that it can make both of those seasons perform very poorly. That's what we saw in 2010 and 2011.
El Nino and La Nina may become more intense, causing more extreme impacts in some places during those times. Back-to-back droughts in Kenya and Somalia, or poor March through June droughts in Ethiopia, could have a substantial regional impact on food availability, water supplies, and hydropower and pasture conditions. Poor cropping condition in Tanzania may also be more likely, according to the NOAA documentation, Chris explains.
You know, Ethiopia has a different relationship to El Nino in the summertime than it does in the springtime. So in, you know, June, July, August, September, there's a strong negative connection between El Niños and droughts in the northern part of the country. And then in the spring, there's a positive relationship between El Niño and rainfall in the southern part of the country.
When asked how the farmers and the pastoralists could survive the climate change and droughts in a country that its economy mainly depends on agriculture, Chris suggests insurance as a means of survival.
You know, your question about livestock insurance is a really great one. You know, one of the things that we're working on is the potential of using high-resolution satellite information to help guide the pastoralists to water and pastures. So that may offer some help for them as well. It's already up and running. This is some collaboration that we're doing with people at Google. Get a high-resolution satellite image of that.
Chris is also an expert on the U.S. Early Warning System, a department that works mainly in regions that don't have sufficient food reliance. The food security analyst, he says, meets in Washington, D.C. and Africa every month. The agency also has offices in Addis Ababa, Nairobi, Guatemala, and various parts of the country. Sarah Halake, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And coming up, we have the sunny side of sports at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests that share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.